My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Welcome back, everybody, to another episode. This week, I've got my guests. Two guests are Brian Rigsby from RetroGameBooks.com. At the time of this recording, he hadn't officially announced it yet, but currently it is now officially announced that his Video Game Maps series of books, the first volume in his SNES collection, is available for pre-order now on his website. Definitely take a look at that. Go to RetroGameBooks.com and pre-order a copy. I already personally have, and I think the project looks super amazing. He's got a lot of contributors to kind of like share some like blurbs and thoughts like all throughout. Definitely is going to be like an evolved version of the books he's been making. So super excited for it. So take a look and check that out, as he's my first guest on the show. Second half of the episode is a conversation with my friend Rich. We actually recorded this a while back, and I've been waiting to pair it up. So this episode's a little bit special that it's not the exact same question being asked to both guests, but that is all around kind of like the story and emotional impact that games made. So we talked to Brian about a story that kind of like lasts and sticks with you, but then talked to Rich about a game that has an emotional connection beyond the game itself. So this kind of just tapping into some more maybe personal connections that we have with the video games that we play. Really fun conversations on both halves, so I hope you all enjoy it. Information and links below in the show notes for anything that we kind of discuss here. And that's all I got, really. Thanks for listening. Thanks for checking it out. Like, subscribe, or rate and review, or refer a friend, or whatever you can do to help spread the word. That goes a long way. Otherwise, enjoy your week, and you'll have another episode next Friday. Bye. Cool. Well, welcome to a new episode. Welcome back again. My guest is Brian Rigsby from RetroGameBooks.com. I want to say it right so people go to the right site. Welcome back. I have got another icebreaker for you before we jump into our question, just to refresh listeners on who you are. So tell us, what is your favorite time period or setting of a video game?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. You know, Red Dead Redemption was great and all the Western stuff and all that, but that's, you know, these games that are in the past, these period pieces can be fun, but typically I really like futuristic types of games. I mean, really, if I can, you know, maybe break your question a little bit, I would say like I like games that have no time period at all. They're, you know, more like fantasy. They're in a world that's different but similar, right? They kind of like break the rules. But if it has to do with you know, thinking about like today versus yesterday and the future in our modern world, probably something futuristic, because then you get to break all the rules. You get to do all kinds of fun new things. So probably something futuristic, I guess, is what I'd say.
Yeah, that's cool. I think I'm probably the same. Like, I love a good, like, classic medieval fantasy setting for like a Japanese RPG. But like, once those started to mix in like sci-fi components, and you got things like Final Fantasy VII or like Star Ocean or things like that, like, then I was like, okay, well, now like kind of like to your breaking the question point, like, it gave it like no rules or no like expectations. Like, you know, you could believe if anything was really happening because of this fusion of like odd in-world technology that doesn't have an equal, but still also has some like comfortable limitations of like, you know, grasslands and forests and like wandering a open world.
But
yeah. Right. Yeah. Like when I think about Final Fantasy, they don't really exist in any time period because they often blend something from the past and the future as we know it. So they're really timeless. So I sometimes think of them as the future, but the past at the same time, but I have a feeling that's what they want, and yeah. That's okay.
Yeah. And sometimes especially playing through Rebirth recently, like when I overthink about the worlds, like the economics and environmental situations of the world, like why would anybody still live near next to the coral reactor that's like dilapidated and like broken down and everything, when like slightly safer and more like upkept like towns are not that far away and things like that, and how many people were really living on the planet? Like Midgar, as you were playing in the original game, definitely felt like a massive. But as you go to all these other towns, it feels like, you know, you got about 70 residents, maybe a little more, you know, like in all these places, and or less even. And so, like, how does this world dynamic truly balance if you try and break the nuts and bolts of it all? Which you shouldn't do, because you're just a weirdo if you do that.
Yeah.
But that's me. Cool. Well, yeah, that was a fun answer. So then the question then that we'll answer today for the episode, what game's story do you still think about long after playing? So this is another kind of really open and kind of wide open kind of question, because, you know, everyone's going to kind of pick a different answer for different reasons. So, yeah, I'd love to hear what your thoughts are and, you know, what game story do you still think about? So, yeah, let us know.
Yeah. It's a really good question. And I, when you shared this prompt with me, I was thinking about like, well, what is it about a game story that like makes me come back to it? Like, what is it that like triggers my memories again, or like kind of makes it stick in my head? And there's a couple of things that came to mind. I mean, the obvious is like, is the writing great? You know, if the writing's great, you know, there's really interesting characters with really good arcs. The way you interact with the characters or portray them, you know, does it feel like, do you relate to them? Do you even need to relate to them? Do you feel something deeper because of the way you're interacting with the world? Is it surprising? How does it carry forward in the sequels, et cetera, if there are any? So, I mean, pretty obvious answer, but like The Last of Us is, you know, both of those games actually, but especially the first one, really, really stand out to me as my primary answer here, because the writing is incredible. You know, I really feel for these characters. There's no one dimensional characters in these games. You know, everyone, like, there's not just this good, you know, wholesome person and evil, you know, antagonists. Like, they are very complex characters, really well thought out. I know there's good criticisms against the game in terms of, like, you know, in the first one, without spoiling anything, in the end, you don't really have control over the end. Like, it is pre-written. You kind of have to just play it out. I was kind of on the side of, I would have done what he did anyway. Yeah. Whereas other people who weren't, thought, well, I don't like that I'm being forced to do this thing, because this is not a passive medium. You know, this is an interactive form of entertainment, so you feel like you have some level of choice, and then all of a sudden you kind of don't, and then you realize it can break the immersion a little bit if you don't agree with that choice, because now you realize you have no control. You know, that can be hurtful for some people's experience, but it worked for me. And I know this is something that, like, this is like the best answer for me, because I still think about this game today. I keep going back to it. Sure, the TV show revitalized those thoughts a little bit, but like, it just kind of stuck with me, just like any good movie or TV show will. It also made me think about how music can really play into keeping me tied to a game or any other media into the future. So the music in The Last of Us is just stellar. I still listen to it. So anytime I like will pop on one of those tunes and hear it, I'll just think back about playing and experiencing it. It'll remind me of the experience, and it makes me think about the story or what was happening when this song was playing, etc. So those things just kind of keep playing off each other. I feel that way about, you know, Final Fantasy VII, the original and the remakes. I feel that way even about games like Chrono Trigger, Castlevania 3, etc. You know, the Chrono Trigger is one of those games where it also has a really cool story, but it's the music is what I think is what makes me think about it even more deeply, because I'll put on that Chrono Trigger record I have, and all of a sudden I'm right back in that world again, kind of re-experiencing it. So music definitely triggers my memories in a way that I really appreciate with these games. So yeah, The Last of Us, that's my answer.
Yeah, Last of Us is a great one. I mean, I think you're right on the money with like that writing, because you don't get like, you can't get comfortable with any character because everyone has flaws, and they're like believable flaws. Like these are like real people in this real, if this setting was real, like you'd have to make some like decisions that question your character and, or maybe you're not proud of, but like when brought to light in a certain way will like influence a relationship and cause dramatics. And like, that was just a good journey, like through and through all the way to that wild ending. And then, even more so with like part two, like, I love like the outrage that like, you know, a small group of people tried to have over like not wanting to play as certain characters or being like so one-sided to like one of the characters versus the other. And in my mind, it's like they did a great job when they riled people up that way, because realistically, if we had the first game from the other perspective, we would have these attachments and we'd have these emotional ties to these other characters and we'd want them to quote unquote like win and get their way. But in reality, like everyone's unfortunately done some wrong to each other in one way or the other, but it's just the extremes of how we react to that, to like either violence or not. And like the level headedness or not, or like just the survival instincts or not. And like those games are just great. Well written, well designed. Like they played out amazingly and top to bottom. Like if you haven't played them, go out and play them now.
Yeah, and I totally agree. Like the way they did the two characters split out, I mean three if you think about like, you know, like the first act of the game.
Yeah.
I appreciated what they did to make the kind of force you to be in someone else's shoes and like see from a different perspective. And the longevity of those segments is what made them impactful. What makes the culmination of the end meaningful, because now you've had kind of an equal footing in seeing what these people see.
Yeah. Yeah. That's crazy. Cool. Well, I have an example. I was going to share Eco from the PS2. Only because it, when you play through in your initial playthrough, like the characters in game speak their own language and you actually like it's subtitled in this language. Like you don't actually even understand the words that are being said. So you can't really like directly understand what's happening with the story. And I'm okay with that. You know, you just have this boy with horns who's like, you see in this opening scene being like in like this like tomb, not killed before he gets put into this thing, but like he's just kind of put into this vessel and carried into this large like temple thing where there's many other versions of these things, but he accidentally kind of like shakes himself loose and is freed. And then as he's trying to kind of escape this place, you know, that you're wandering around, you don't know who you are, you don't know why you're there, you don't know what's happening in the world around you, but you stumble upon this girl, like, kind of glowing almost in, like, a white dress and everything, kind of trapped herself, and you free her, and then now suddenly the mechanic of, like, holding her hand to guide her through the levels and, like, go through the puzzles is happening, and, like, you just hear, like, when there's danger present and these shadowy monsters just, like, emerge out of nowhere and you have to, like, swat them away with, like, a wooden stick and whatever you can do. You don't know what's really being said or anything, but like you can tell like the emotional impact and like this, like the fear and the being scared and like, you know, being heroic and kind of going through it. And like in the soft, like memorable moments and the little chatter that happens, you can tell they're like, you know, taking something in or feeling good about a certain moment, but just not exactly what or why, all the way kind of through it and everything. And so it always just sticks with me just because like I still don't truly know. I haven't done like a deep dive or, you know, on like a Wikipedia entry to have it like break it down for me or anything. I just like playing through and just thinking back, you know, on those playthroughs, like, you know, what is it that makes it such a great game to me? And, you know, it's like still being able to have an emotional connection to characters and still being able to feel their highs and lows, even with the minimalist of storytelling and even with not even being able to understand their language. Like, it's got to be some kind of success. You've got to award the team for storytelling, because it just kind of transcends, like, you know, really like any type of language or culture or anything like that at all. It's just something you can understand without having like that knowledge. But yeah, like I said, there is the ability to, if you do complete it and under certain, you know, rules, you'll like unlock the ability to kind of like translate that language and kind of play through. But I never really like quite did, like I said. And then that carries into the somewhat sequel. Like they definitely have ties to it, but again, it's in an unspoken and undefined way. But Shadow of the Colossus, which again, you just see a man arriving to a temple with a woman who appears to be dead. He speaks to an ominous voice about a task to kill these giant 16 giant creatures to restore, you know, her. And you're just off to murder these giant, like, wonderful, like, creations that are just, like, bizarrely, like, wandering this world, but you just don't exactly know why. And every time you do, it just feels a little bit wrong, or like something sinister is maybe happening that you're not quite, you know, informed on. And yeah, it's just an interesting like design and how they just kind of transplant that world. But those ones I just love. I've played through them originally on the PS2, and then they had like a PS3 version of Eco, and then Shadow of the Colossus also had a really nice like remastered remake from Bluepoint Games on PS4, and I played through most of it again. I didn't finish it, but I got played through most of it again then. But both those are just definitely ones that like I can still just remember the game, and even though I don't really truly know what's happening, I just have this attachment and this, like, you know, really like fond memory of like, you know, what it was like to kind of experience that and feel that, the emotions of the game without even like the understanding of it.
Yeah. I played the Shadow of the Colossus, remake. That was my first experience actually. And I did play The Last Guardian. I never played Eco. I really appreciated the way they do extremely subtle storytelling and Shadow of Colossus, to all your points. Like you're saying, you get this feeling of something is grim. Like you're thinking about like that meme, like maybe we're the bad guys kind of thing, but then you're wondering like, but is this for the right reasons? But what are the reasons? And it all just kind of unfolds, but then they don't give you the full picture, which I think is great, right? Like you got to have some mystery in there. You don't want to tell everything. Is Eco similar in the sense of, like, it's extremely subtle, the storytelling, where you're kind of like, not everything's revealed. You're just kind of filling in the blanks yourself. Is it similar?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And like I said, the Shadow of the Colossus, you do get like I think his name's Dorman or whatever the entity, ominous entity is. It's subtitled in English, and you hear just the small bit of story and exposition that's even given. Like, so you can understand just small limitations of that game. Eco, it's like, there's just, you know, a few pockets of like dialogue, but you don't like the subtitles are not in English. It's just in a completely different like symbolology, like language thing. So you don't understand what's being said, even though it's not a ton, but it's yeah, you fill in the blanks just based on like the tone and the emotion of it. And like, oh, she's like sees this like witch creature thing, and she's afraid of it, and she wants to escape it. And you are just like this boy who stumbled upon her, and you feel like it's your job to kind of protect her. So like, if she's scared, like you're going to get defensive and you're going to want to try and protect her. And yeah, it's really driven in a minimal way, but still in like that same like tone and vibe, of Shadow of the Colossus and, what's not Trico. What, that was the code name for it. What was the other one called?
Oh,
you just mentioned it. The one with the big monster creature that you get to play with. Last Guardian.
That's, yeah, Last Guardian.
Yeah. Sorry, I don't know why I blanked on that name. but yeah, you know, it's, I mean, it's like, if you like those other games, like it's worth going back to, but it's also the one that feels the most dated. There's some like box pushing puzzles and some design elements that are a little bit like kind of scratch your head. Like, how was I ever going to figure this out without like running around this like zone I'm in right here mindlessly and like struggling to solve this puzzle? But some of the other ones are just really cool, like visual treats, and really kind of like push, like that PS2 moments, you know, of that era, you know, to like cool highs.
Yeah, I should check that one out. It looks like there was a remastered version of that as well. So,
yeah,
that's out there.
Yep. Cool. Well, that was a fun question. Yeah, I've had that prompt for a while, and like, I've I've pitched it like, hey, you want to talk about any of these? And no one's ever picked that one and everything. So I'm glad that you did. So,
oh, gosh. I had a hard time selecting a game, to be honest, because like there's others like Hyperlight Drifter. I would love to talk about like another like subtle, but just kind of sticks with you. Like there are so many games out there where the story just like will not release itself from me.
Yeah, I've got more too. I was about to say some, but I might as well. I should probably save them for when I do ask somebody else and I'll have an answer there. But yeah, right on. Well, cool, Brian. Thanks for joining the show again. We will be sure to check out RetroGameBooks.com. He's got some new stuff in the works, and we're excited to kind of check those things out. So have a good one, Brian.
Thank you so much.
Welcome back again to the show, Rich. It's been a while since we chatted. Gosh, I mean, like...
Yeah, man, we can't let this too much time go in between our conversations.
It's been like at least 35 seconds since we last recorded, but listeners may think that it's been weeks.
Yeah, I hardly recognize you.
But to help refamiliarize listeners with you, Rich, I'm going to ask you an icebreaker question. What is your favorite game that has a color in the title?
Jesus. Oh, man. That has a color in
yes,
the title.
There is a color in its title.
Oh, my gosh.
Pick your favorite. Or you don't have to be your specifically your favorite, but what is a game you enjoy that has a color in its title?
I guess just off the top of my head, without warning, I'm not a fan of, well, I've played them, but I'm not a huge fan of the Pokemon game, so that's immediately out. Mm-hmm. So I'll say Red Dead Redemption.
Red Dead Redemption. Okay, there you
Even
go.
Even the first one I loved as well.
All right. That's got a color in the title. You've passed
sure
the question. I'm not going to
really
answer.
I enjoyed the first one. I don't think people played a lot. Or not Red Dead Redemption 1, but Red Dead Revolver.
Oh, the Capcom PS2
game. That was a fun game.
Yeah.
That was very well done.
There were some good PS2 Western like shooters. Samurai... What was that one called? Oh, my gosh. Samurai Western?
Samurai Champloo?
No, Samurai Western. No. What was that called? It was an Atlas-published, like, hack-and-slash game. Oh, my gosh.
You might be right.
And then, like, Way of the Samurai, but that wasn't really Western. But I guess the second one had, like, industrial people coming in. Anyway, whatever. Regardless. We're done with that question. Welcome back again, Rich. We are going to be answering a question today that I'm excited to actually answer. I've been thinking about this, and I was hoping a guest would pick this to want to do it, but we've decided to answer the question. It's going to be posited here. It's, do you have a game that you have an emotional connection with beyond the game itself? That is the question of the moment. And you're the guest. I'll let you pick whether you want to answer first or if you want me to answer first or how you want to do it.
Yeah, you go first so I get some context.
Okay. Okay. Well,
what do you think about it?
Well, I mean, this is kind of silly, but it's topical and it's at the moment too. But Final Fantasy VII, like, that's just a game that, like, I mean, like, I, like, bled that game forever, it felt like, when I was a kid. Both my brother and I, Casey, you know, when we were growing up together and that game first came out, it was like in an awkward time and we didn't actually have a memory card yet for our PlayStation. And so we would play Final Fantasy VII. We rented it from a Hollywood video. We like badgered my mom into, we were driving home one day from doing some shopping. Well, we badgered my mom into convincing her to open up a Hollywood video account in a, like a town that was 45 minutes away from where we lived, knowing full well we would not make it back in time to return these games, and we would likely just return them and have it be like a negative and delinquent account, and who cared of the impact, you know, it was going to make on my mom. But we rented Resident Evil 2 and Final Fantasy 7 from them. This would have been like, you know, shortly after Resident Evil 2 was new, so a couple months after Final Fantasy VII was released, but we would play disc one and we would pop it in the system, and we would just play as long as we possibly could. And we'd play the first like few like hours of that game, and we'd like over and over and over again, because ultimately we'd have to turn off the system eventually and we'd lose all that progress. And I can just remember like spending like time with my brother, and like just like that bonding time. Like, you know, that was the age where we started to kind of like grow apart and have differences. Like, he was, you know, becoming a teenager and everything. So it was like kind of like our last summer together type of vibe, you know, like having that game. Awesome. And then, as we got like the memory card, we got to explore it more, and it was like a whole second, like set of like wind in it and everything. And we committed to each other to like not advance the plot unless we were both around, but we both could play it. So like, if he wasn't around, I'd just grind it out and get into battles and explore for secrets, but I wouldn't advance the plot. And same thing for him. And he betrayed my trust once by taking it to a friend's house, and he used like a game shark to get like max gil and max like level or something like that. And I was like, dude, you broke the game, you know, like this is ridiculous. This is unfair. You know, like now we're like going to like be able to just like blow right through it. There's not going to be a challenge. But we were close enough to the end, and like the way we were already playing it, you know, we were already like way over leveled for like most of the areas we were in. So it really wasn't that big of a deal. But yeah, it just because of how much time we spent in the world and like, you know, dissecting it together, like I've just always had that like plot and those characters and all that stuff just ingrained like within me. And like, that was like a really big RPG for me in my life. And that's been like the high watermark. That's like, I definitely say that's my favorite game of all time. And so now, with these like remakes coming out, it's just like, you know, like all this nostalgia, all this like going back and like seeing what they've changed, which they've enhanced, what they've like, you know, like brought back with like a giant facelift. Like, it's just cool to like have all those same feelings again and everything, and just be brought back to these characters. But like, I definitely like, I can hear music and like the soundtrack to it, and just be like, you know, like remember where I was when I was playing that as a kid, or like a bus ride to school and reading the strategy guide. And like there's like worldly moments that like I associate with the game itself, even though, you know, it's just a video game, you know, like it's seeing Cloud, seeing like the materia and like, you know, like the logo of it and all that stuff, seeing like any of like the classic like landmarks and locations of the game and all that stuff, just like bring up just good warm feelings and all that stuff, and just all love.
A real emotional connection is what it is, and that's awesome.
Yeah.
What's funny, just on a quick side note, what's funny is I had a similar situation with a high school friend of mine when Shenmue on the Dreamcast came out. We also could not save the game, and he would come and spend the night at my house for the weekend, and we would stay up all night and just take turns. Like, you get 2 hours, I get 2 hours, and we'll move through the game together. And that's how we played that first Shenmue game together. It was pretty good. We beat it in like 2.5 days of that weekend, just basically staying up all night. Dang. So that was a good memory.
I did a fun challenge not that long ago with that, because I recently re-got a Dreamcast, and Nicole bought me the Shenmue 1. And I played it originally. I played the PS4 re-release of it and got the Platinum Trophy on that even too. Like, I love that. And but when I got the Dreamcast discs again, I was sitting down and we were waiting on some friends to come over. I think it was for my birthday, but waiting on some friends to come over, I just like popped disc one in and I was like, let me see how far I can get in this game off just pure knowledge and memory. Just like, you know, like, just let's just see.
Power run it.
Yeah. And I got like quite like pretty far into it. Like, you know, from what I remember, I got to like a first point where you literally had to wait for night to come, like earlier on. And I was like, oh man, like everything else, like I managed to get like so many like major events done, like in the first day and a half of the game, that it wasn't until like I got like manually slowed down because I had to wait for a night cycle and everything. And I was like, oh, this is pretty good. Like, if you knew exactly what to do, you could get through that game pretty quickly. But like the way the game was designed, like likely probably took 8 times the amount of like time it would have taken just like me blasting through it. But yeah, love Shenmue.
That was a great game. I would say for me, it's almost, dare I say, I have two games that create equal emotion, but for different reasons. So one is a series of, well, they're both series of games, but one is an attachment to actual gaming, and one is just an emotional attachment. the Resident Evil series, you mentioned Resident Evil 2 earlier, but the Resident Evil series really, I think, was my growth into gaming and my growth into really enjoying my time sitting in front and learning these stories and pushing through these fantasy worlds that are created in these games. I was dating a girl in my teenage years that her brother had a PlayStation and he had Resident Evil, and we would hang out over at their house, and they were like, here, borrow it, you can play it. And that's kind of where I got into that. And to this day, every single Resident Evil, even Resident Evil 6 that I absolutely detest, I still play the whole game, went through it just for the sake of, this is something that really solidified my my enjoyment in games. And I will always kind of go back to it, regardless of what comes out or how it changes or how it evolves. So I'm always looking forward to the next one from that. But the real emotional game for me is, believe it or not, the Bomberman series. It's a silly game, as we all know, but Bomberman, particularly the multiplayer in Bomberman, is something that all through my teenage years, through college, I've always had a group of friends that I've played this multiplayer Bomberman and gotten incredibly addicted to. Particularly in college, we would sit around and literally play it 3-4 hours at the end of the night, on the weekend, and have real arguments, real, shit talking going on, real intense battles when it came to that game. And it's something that, as I got older and kept on playing, and I have a family of my own now, as you know, my wife is not a gamer at all. She's tried, but she just has no hand-eye coordination, so she's not great. But Bomberman was a game that she was able to actually pick up when I introduced it, that she's actually pretty decent at, believe it or not. And what's crazy is the multiplayer takes a lot of forward thinking in order to be good at it. And, she plays it very well. It's something that our children have played with us. We play it together as a family. We get in the same heated battles and shit talking that I did with my college buddies. So it's like, I feel like it's a game that has always moved forward with me and created these really like lasting fun experiences of people hanging out together and enjoying a game. I know gaming is a big online thing now, and not to sound like an old man, but I'm not great at the online part. I'm not great at communicating when we're online and all that stuff. So I really enjoy sitting around with people and getting into it like that. Even like games like Mario Party, back in the day, that you could just get into it with each other, everybody sitting around. So Bomberman has been that series for me that I'm just kind of joyful when I'm playing it, regardless of what's happening. So it's pretty cool.
Do you have a favorite Bomberman? Like, is it Saturn Bomberman or?
So our favorite one, or I guess my favorite one, but I've introduced it to them, is Super Bomberman 5 Gold Cartridge. I think it was, I want to say SNES, but that's one of my favorites. In terms of the way the mechanics work and everything, the way everything flows. But yeah, I like Bomberman.
The modern one you're playing?
People who would say that.
Yeah.
The most modern one we're playing, I think, is on Xbox that we usually play it on now. I don't remember what it's called specifically.
I was wondering if it was the Switch one too. Isn't there like the Super Bomberman R on Switch, I believe?
Oh yeah, I think we have that one too. But just with our setup, it's easier to do the one that I have on Xbox. So we usually play that one as a family. But yeah, it's a great little game.
Bomberman, that's cool.
Nothing crazy special, but just fun.
That's cool. Well, thank you, Rich, for joining me in another week of this. I hope you had some fun. I had some fun talking to you about that. I think it's a good question. So drums up the good feelings.
Yeah, drums up all the good feelings. And I'm sure every single person will have a crazy different answer to that, which I think is very cool.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear this episode when it's put together with others. But yeah, thank you, Rich. We will talk more in the future. You will be on a future episode guaranteed.
All right. Nice talking to you.